This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Today's show is sponsored by Pro Flowers. Get 20% off bouquets of $29 or more this holiday season. Just go to proflowers.com and use the code BADCHRISTIAN at checkout.
Today's show is also sponsored by NatureBox. Get 50% off your first order by going to naturebox.com/badchristian.
You are now entering the Bad Christian Podcast.
Take it away, boys.
3, 2, 1, Joey Spencer.
His name is Joey Spencer. His name is Matt Carter. His name is Toby Morrell, and we are Bad Christian. Party on.
Party on. Okay, very good.
You did not match what I was doing worth a hill of beans. That was
yeah,
the worst
did. It was
tone.
Cool.
No, he didn't. I was like going hardcore. And Toby's like, hey, yes, Matt. That sounded like Little Orphan Annie show or something like that. What? Can you just try? Like, can you try to make me look a little bit better? I mean, are you purposely
matter.
Trying
I
to make
try
me look bad?
The rest of my life, and I can't do that. No, it's not yeah, man, it's impossible, Pastor Svensson. My God,
Pastor Svensson. Hey, you know, one thing that I have noticed is there's a lot of people that when they refer to me as Pastor Joey, those are the people that are really hungry for power.
I know that sounds no bad. Doubt, now, no doubt about now, that. I love that observation.
Now, wow. some of them are very genuine, and they say it because they think it's the most respectful sure. way of addressing me. And I usually say, "Oh, just Joey is fine." But there are some people I just read it all over. I'm like,
absolutely,
agree. And I mean it when I say this. And I'm going to try to say it very lightheartedly. It disgusts me when people say
you're talking
Pastor
about a personality
Joey.
Type there, and it's a suck up. That's a person yeah. who wants to be next to a person with power to advance their own
yes.
power. Because I would love to have
yes.
as much power.
Yes.
I don't need to be over power over you. All I need to do is right. be near you, and I'll have power over others. But that's the
exactly.
mentality, and it has nothing to do with pastors. It's just one natural thing. It's the way people suck up to bullies and all that kind of stuff. It's just that way all the way around. But it's built into human. You know, you want to be the second, the number two guy to the head lion in the tribe or whatever. You'll get the spill,
yeah.
the spillover from his.
It's and funny
by
that
being
you
a
that
total
word,
suck up. So it is disgusting. I think.
I know that this just shows how. I mean, we always talk about AI and stuff, but I mean. There is no chance I could spell words without like a computer or helping me or whatever. Matt,
no
I know
way.
You can't. Like
I can't
when
even
I was
get close enough. I get
when
so
I was
mad
sick.
When I can't get it close enough for spell check to get it right. That
exactly.
Happens
two
the
instances.
Time.
The thing that made me real mad, it just lets me know the word is wrong. It won't check like diarrhea. So hard to
can't
spell.
Can't get it.
It's just like of
no
course you should use the word
it.
Shit. It just of course you should. There's no reason to have to try and write diarrhea. The word is awful. It sounds awful. It's how shit is. Sounds nicer, better, everything about it. It's just way better than that word. The other one is disgusting. I promise you, it was about a full minute where I was spelling it disgusting. D-I-S-C-U-S-T. And I couldn't get it. I was like, what in the hell? It's disgusting. It's
I'm a
disgusting.
Little surprised that spell check isn't better. But yeah, there's so many words
I
know. That I can't get.
All right, so Oxford Dictionaries. First of all, let me tell you the hardest word for me to spell, and I can never spell it, and the spell check does not even pick it up, surprisingly, is privilege. Cannot
oh,
spell
me
that word.
Either.
I cannot.
Golly,
it's so hard.
It's hard.
So Oxford Dictionaries on online, here's the top 23 common words that's the hardest to spell. The first one really doesn't make sense
to me. Are we
going
to go through all 23?
I'll say them real fast. Weird, accommodate, handkerchief, indict,
handkerchief.
Cemetery, conscious,
indict.
Rhythm, playwright,
indict.
Embarrass, millennium. Yeah, I cannot spell millennium. Pharaoh, liaison, liaison, convalesce, supersede, ecstasy,
liaison.
Caribbean, harass, maintenance, pronunciation, arctic, occurred, recommend, and deductible. Those are the hardest words according to this
Look,
website.
I know I'm a really bad reader, but I didn't realize that you guys are also bad. Maybe I'm not as bad as
everyone is.
Well, spelling's
every
not even important anymore.
Is bad. The majority of the world is, and everybody acts like, oh, well, you left off this letter. You misspelled this word. Oh, you didn't get the comma right. What about the quotation? All that stuff is just so bullshit. It's all stupid.
I have something to say to all those self-proclaimed grammar Nazis out there. Shut up. Nobody likes any kind of Nazis. Go to hell.
Right.
I'll put you in with the rest of the Nazis. Knock it off.
Hey, yeah, you N-A-S-I-S's.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that math is a different category? Because I really don't think spelling is important, especially with computers and spell checks and all that. But don't you think basic math, even though calculators exist, is always important because you just need it day to day?
Yes, but I had a thought the other day. I think I told Reva this or Bridget this, but I am so bad with I probably border on the dyslexic thing. I just get stuff backwards and I can't get it. I can't do stuff left to right. And so I invert
spell
numbers
dyslexic.
A ton. And so I was thinking about it because I am good at math. I'm very good at math in it conceptually, but I wonder how poorly I've done, how many math questions in my life on tests I've gotten wrong just because of I wrote the number wrong or read a number wrong. Like, you know what I mean? My math scores would probably be way higher because I'm very good at math on a fundamental and conceptual level. That's kind of the way my brain works, but I bet I've always tested a lot lower due to just the interfacing with digits and text that you know, comes along with the territory. But So I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but something that has really, really, I can't stop thinking about it, and it's frustrating me to no end, is that video of that kid that got bullied. And it's been around. I mean, it's been around for the last week almost. Yeah. But did y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. It's a kid. Was it a sports team? He just got bullied at school, and his mom, they're sitting in a car. Mm-hmm. And she films it about how he was bullied. And I mean, it's like blown up. Like,
it's everywhere.
A bunch of sports stars have tweeted him or messaged him or given support and all this stuff. And so to most people, it's a heartwarming story. I mean, I'm
not
getting
at
a feeling
all
here
to me.
Matt doesn't.
Not at all.
Doesn't like that. Okay.
Joe, you know what we're talking about?
Like it?
I have no idea what y'all.
Okay,
even
so it's just
about.
I don't want to show the video here. It just frustrates me too much. It's really upset. I can't stop thinking about it. I'm driving me crazy. it's a kid who got bullied and he's crying to his mom, talking about being bullied and that kind of thing. And everybody is rushing to talk. You know, Dana White says come to the UFC. They started a GoFundMe. They get all this money and just because this kid has been bullied and he's doing it now. I don't know if anybody else has covered it or talked about it this way. I just think it is absolutely, absolutely a violation of any reasonable parenting or child raising or child development whatsoever to do this. I think it is just horribly misguided to put this kid on the internet like that. I think it violates his rights as a human and a kid unbelievably. Like, clearly, no matter what, obviously unethical and wrong to every degree to participate with this thing. This is a kid's vulnerable moment where he's crying and talking to his mom and she's filming it and uploads it. I don't know if it leaked or she upload. I don't care about any of that. Yeah. And even reacting to it and retweeting it and sharing it, you are messing with this kid's life. You can't do that. He didn't sign up for this. All he did was cry to his mom about something that was happening. And now it's the same thing I'm talking about where power will mess you up or getting too much money or this is your life being put into some situation where it's going to be affected and you can't, it's out of control. I mean, there's so many ways that this goes wrong. It's just so wrong. It makes no sense to me. I don't see how anybody could be happy about it.
Okay, well, one, how about this? One, the kid doesn't feel that way. The kid thinks this is awesome. LeBron James tweeted at him or something, or, you know, he gets to go to UFC or so. Like, the kid and his feeling, and the kid,
how does a kid feel when he gets to have sex with his teacher and he thinks it's great when he's 15? He thinks that's awesome too. Is it? No, it's not. He may think it's awesome. It's messed him up.
I'm hearing what you're saying, but I think the mother maybe in her defense, I feel like I'm doing the Joey Svensson thing here. In her defense, I think she, who knows how often he's gotten bullied, and maybe this was the final straw, and she wanted to see, show people, hey, look, this is happening at the school my son goes to, and it has to stop. And then it went viral, not because of her, but because of how much of an emotional chord it struck with everybody.
Yeah, now, so the kid is, that's fine. I'm not saying the kid is bad for doing that or saying that. It's just a betrayal. It's no consent on his part. Kids are totally, their consent is violated from the moment they're born. It drives me crazy. I mean, and there's no way around some of it. You have to wipe a kid's genitals. Sure, they don't get to consent. But, I mean, that's on you already. That's already your burden as a person that brings a kid into the world. It's the burden's on you to be respectful of them and not mess up their childhood. Child actors. Oh, it's great. He makes $1 million and gets on screen, right? Awesome. And is that good? Is that what we, is that, the kid doesn't get to pick that. If they do, it's just not, that's just too much to put on a kid. So this obviously has thousands of ways it can go sideways. I don't know what they are, but I don't predict it's good for this kid. No matter if he gets $1 billion and becomes famous, that's bad too. It's not something he signed up for.
I see what you're saying. Sometimes it works out well, like Michael Jackson and those sorts of children that grew up
good
in the entertainment business.
I mean, let's just go to the local level, though. Even the kid, and I don't know anything about this story other than it's already fun. No matter the outcome, I think it's wrong. And I wish it was against the rules of Facebook that you could even do, even have this out there. Let's just say not, I mean, like.
Why is it wrong, though?
It's just a violation of that kid's rights as a human. He can't deal with this. He didn't sign up for it. He doesn't know what the possibilities are. If your mom posts some video of you, I mean, it could go a lot of ways. People could make fun of you more. Oh, that's the kid whose mom uploads the video of him crying, then he gets made fun of more if people don't give him a bunch of money. I'm also arguing that if you give him a bunch of money and attention, that ain't good for people either. We know it's not good for anybody to get too famous for something they didn't earn. I don't believe you should have money you didn't earn. I don't believe you should have fame you didn't earn that you didn't sign up for. It's not good for people, no matter what the outcome is. Also, how far are we off from figuring out who the people are that these kids that bullied them and going after them? I mean, it's not going to be that hard to figure out. If you think it's so bad, and it also goes so hard into everybody's freaking hero mode. Everybody wants to be a hero. I'm going to help this kid. Every kid's getting bullied everywhere, and it's horrible. And now you get to look good for weighing in on the cutest one and giving him extra money. And everything about it is a joke. I mean, it's not right.
Well, how about this? I've already seen now some people are talking about the mom has said like some racist stuff in the back in her past, and that's going to come. So to your point, this could easily cause way more bullying on a world level. I mean, it will. There will be more people that hate him or talk bad about him or whatever. I agree. It's a hard line when you're a parent. For example, I reposted it.
You would never do that to your kid.
Yes,
in a million years, you wouldn't take a tender, vulnerable moment like that. It's not like he did something funny and got on Ellen. That's bad enough. That's not as bad.
No, but that's what I'm getting ready to say. I had a thing where June, when she was little, she was singing this song, I love chocolate Cheerios, I want chocolate Cheerios, and I did it together, and I posted it, and it got like on just my personal page like 2,000 likes. And if that somehow went viral, we'd have gone to Ellen.
That's different, but it's not as bad.
You might not have had outrage though about it. So I mean, I don't think this was an intentional. This woman did this so it would go viral or whatever. I think it's out of your control once you video something these days.
You shouldn't. That's not a. First of all, you shouldn't get out the camera if your kid is doing that. I mean, first of all, don't get the camera out when your kid is crying to you. First of all, secondly, don't
that's
post
a good point.
It.
I thought the same thing. That is a great point. I agree. Why are you, if your kid's crying and stuff like that? What is the mentality and why is that happening? That it could be. And you're right. The potential for this to turn really sour is huge.
Yeah,
it could
no
get real
what.
Bad for him, the mom. I mean, more people, they might have to, you know.
Going after the people at school.
All kinds of stuff.
And it's completely unsympathetic to normal bullying that happens all the time everywhere. Nobody cares, but you just care about the one where you look good. Everybody's in hero mode and mob mode. And do you really trust the Twitter and the internet and the Facebook mobs to regulate justice here? It's crazy. Right. And we know that the mobs have all the sway in the world. They get people fired, they get people hired, they get people bullied, they get people killed. There was a porn star who said she wouldn't do scenes with people who had done gay porn. This story drives me crazy too. Yeah. And she was one of the top porn actresses in the world, 24 years old, and she got hated on for being anti-gay. For that, really bad, because she decided she didn't want to do scenes with people who had already done gay porn, something like that. And so she got anti-LGBT, you know, LGBTQ people said she was homophobic and all this stuff. She killed herself.
Gee.
You know, I mean, because they were mad that she was bullying them. They said, you're bullying, you know, LGBTQ people and hate speech and all that. And then she killed herself. I mean, this stuff is, these mobs are not, this is not good. You don't, you know, I mean, I'm sure it makes me really think about, like, I don't even know about posting videos of my kids doing simple stuff or using their name on the podcast. I mean, it makes me rethink that. This is, I just don't think they should be brought into it.
That's a good point. I've been thinking more and more about that. For example, no matter what, some people will say, well, once it goes on the internet, it's there forever and you can never take it back or whatever. Part of me thinks that's a good thing, and part of me thinks it's a bad thing. Like, I think there are some things that it's okay who you were when you were at that time, even if it was wrong and you've changed your opinion, okay. At the same time, you're right. There's part of me that I wonder if culture there's going to be a big pushback from social media, like an avoidance, because it's becoming a cultural norm to hate, put down, abuse the medium. For sure. So that eventually, I'm wondering, is it only going to get worse? Like, it's either super high, this kid's so amazing. Like, it might be both in the future at all times. One, at the beginning is, he's so cool. We want to support him. He's awesome. And then one next week is, we hate him. This is bad. The mothers are racist. It's all this. I mean, you might end up getting both to where maybe we are headed to where you will stay off that. Maybe social media is headed towards a dinosaur level already. I don't know. It's gotten so big it can't keep
going. It's dangerous. I mean, it's just obviously dangerous and out of control, and there's justice being mitigated with no, I mean, just or what's seen as, who knows? I mean, it's so much unintended consequence.
I'm not exempt from it either. I can use it and abuse it. For sure.
It's like that guy, you know, that guy a while back, a couple of years ago, who was in Detroit and he'd walk 20 miles to work every day, and they gave him money and bought him a car. Yep, well, that ended horribly, by the way. Same thing. Right. At least he was an adult that could accept it and deal with it, but his life got ruined. People all wanted his thing. His car got stolen and trashed. He had to move from his house. He had nothing left, even after he got the money, because everybody in his community thought he betrayed him, and they all wanted the money that he got because he was in a super poor neighborhood. You can't handle stuff like that. You can't fix people by just giving them stuff and acting like a hero. Right. And turning your back on them, and people are going to you can't handle this stuff. It's just not good. Anyway, don't do that to your kid. I mean, maybe it's a sickness of wanting attention and GoFundMes and all that stuff. Maybe that's a bad direction to go, because how many GoFundMes are like, oh, if it gets enough publicity or a rock star tweets it about his dog or whatever it is. What are we doing? I mean, who are the people that get the help? Whoever gets the most visibility, whoever's the cutest, whoever's the saddest. I mean, and then whatever. Yeah. It's crazy. It's a weird path.
I mean, it begs the question, is fame evil, bad, dangerous?
Almost dangerous, for sure.
Exclusively. Like, what are the... A lot of people will argue, well, if you're famous, you can do more, but what does that actually mean? And should everything always just be on the local level, because we cannot handle it? Like, things that are associated with fame seem to be negative. Like, I mean, think of a famous person. They can't be normal and go to Target. I just saw a video of Beyonce can't go to Target and shop. Now, of course, the money's great and that's awesome, but do you need that much money? Is having a shitload of money really that good for you? Matt argues all the time that winning the lottery is bad.
It's bad.
But
lottery point
and fame-wise might be
some
bad.
Some people can handle power and fame, but not if it is thrust on you and you haven't earned it or deserved it and worked your way up to it. You can't handle $1 billion tomorrow, but if you make $100,000 and then $300,000 and then turn that to $900,000 and then get, you know,
if you
can grow this money, if you can grow your responsibility and demonstrate it throughout as an adult, okay, we can talk about that. But thrusting these powerful 2,000 horsepower Lamborghinis on people that don't know how to drive a go-kart is never going to end well.
Joey, can you handle $1 billion tomorrow?
Everybody's answer is yes, and that's going to demonstrate the fact they don't have good judgment in the first
place.
Matt,
is your answer yes, or do you?
Yes, I would take it.
Okay.
That already demonstrates my lack of ability and lack of restraint. I'm serious. I'd take $10 billion if you offered it to me. I don't have a choice. I'm not principled enough. I'm not disciplined enough to handle it. I'll just take it, and then I'll figure the rest out.
What if you formed a Matt Carter $1 billion board where you had five people that were going to help you? They were going to help you decide how to spend your money.
And then what if you got up in front of people once a week, and whatever day you choose?
It's just nonsense. Let's just at least agree not to do this shit to kids is all I'm saying, okay? If you win lottery,
don't give
feel
kids
free.
Money.
Just don't do this to kids.
Kids can't handle money.
So I don't know anything about the lady being racist and all that stuff, but I don't know.
I dislike that lady
based on the fact that she would even pick up her phone in that moment is my judgment against that mom.
Yeah, I mean, that's just everybody's tendency, though. I actually recorded Waylon getting a shot, and Priscilla got really pissed at me.
Why? Because he was yelling and stuff?
Because he fell apart.
I wish I had that. June did the same thing. I wasn't there, and I was like, please, Jess, why didn't you film it? She's like, no, I would never do that. But I was like, yeah, what are you talking about? I mean, you got to. I would love to see June screaming, no, no. And I would love to watch that 10 years from now. But
yeah, oh, yeah. Sure. That's
like how cool would it be if your mom sent you a video of you getting a shot when you were 3 years old?
Right.
You would just think that's the coolest thing ever. I have footage of Waylon getting a shot.
It's unbelievable. I mean, but the thing is, we are in a day and age where no matter what, we cannot handle anything that is coming right now. I think it's on such a level.
We may be at the limit. You're right.
I'm wondering, is that like one of the root causes of a lot of our depression, a lot of our anxiety, especially anxiety for sure. I'll at least say that. I know my anxiety, some of the things that happen online or that the responsibility I have to say something or not say something or just post something or keep up with my social media. How about that? How about not me even responding, just keeping up with what's happening on Facebook is a responsibility no humans ever had until the 2000s. Yeah. And it's like this weird anxiety. And it seems as if we are built for a small localized group. Now, also, what's interesting about that, I can remember talking to somebody, I think it was a grandparent of mine or an older person in my life, I can't remember who it is, but they were talking about how church had changed because they used to get all the gossip and news on Sunday, and Sunday was the day where they would go and they'd find out about everybody in town, and they would learn stuff, and that was the day, and that was the big thing. You might see somebody occasionally during the week, or if you had them over for dinner or something, but like the get together, the social news was one day a week. You know what I mean? And then, mm-hmm. and then you got your paper if you got it or whatever. So there was limited access to information. Now there's unlimited access to information, and it's almost impossible for me to shut it off. I have to tell myself every morning, do not look at your phone. I'm happier when I don't hear things. For example, today I've been doing booking and stuff for our podcast. I've been telling myself, don't look at your phone. I did really good for like 3 or 4 days. This morning I was like, I'll just look at my phone, and immediately got an email, a canceled guest, this. And I was immediately thrust into the world of work and anxiety and pressure when I was like, wait a minute, I haven't even had a cup of coffee yet. Why did I do that? There's no chance of turning it off though. Like, I mean, the scariest thing to me is there. I don't know if you can go back. I don't know. I don't know if there's ever going back from smartphones. I mean, it's only going to get more.
We have to work really hard to develop our ethics and our etiquette and keep up as best we can. No matter when the medium changes, we have to really take the ethics very seriously.
But should you be that way? Should you be introducing that kid then immediately? Like, should all of our kids know what internet bullying is?
Okay.
Oh, well, I got bullied when I was two.
I'll give you an example of why this is so messed up for that kid. He was going through something that's absolutely normal. Even though it's bad to get bullied, to be made fun of, to all those things, they are normal. And he was processing that. He was dealing with it. He was sad. Right. He was frustrated. He was thinking about the future of that. He was supposed to go back to school the next day and deal with it normally.
Right.
Now that's not even possible. He might have been able to push through, be a resilient kid that had some adversity, used it to his advantage, became a bigger person, had a mom that helped him out, and went through the hard work of learning how to deal with that, which many people go on and have been bullied and then become on to be successful and confident and secure. And he's been deprived of a normal opportunity to even try to get through it normally. Not possible now. Now he's that kid forever. Everybody at school knows who he is. He'll never not be that. He has no opportunity to go back to normal and try to learn how to get through the adversity the way that you're supposed to. He's been robbed of that. That's a tragedy.
Well, here's what I would say. Sometimes in life, you're right. You just got to take a risk, and that's normal, and you got to do that. Just like our guest coming up, Chad Johnson, who wrote 1,000 Risks.
So we've been talking our asses off. Can we bring old Chad on?
Sure.
Chad sure, Johnson.
You guys know who Chad. Tell them who Chad is if people aren't familiar with Chad. Even though he's been on this podcast and everything else a lot, but just
he's been around. He's a big name at Tooth and Nail. Signed a lot of bands. Has done a ton of stuff and went on to start Come and Live Records. And now he's even authored his first book. It's called 1,000 Risks. We've known him. Check out the Labeled podcast. You can see his episode and find out a lot more about his personal life too. I'm sure he'll talk to us about it too. But we wanted to see what all these 1,000 risks he's taken. All right, folks, the holidays mean one thing. Go, go, go. You've got presents to wrap, travel to plan, relatives to brace for. With all of that, it can be hard to find time to eat healthy. I know for a fact because when I don't have my Nature Box snacks, I end up stopping somewhere, getting something that's not that good. And that's why Nature Box is so awesome. Let Nature Box help with snacks that are both delicious and better for you. If you're trying to eat better, the holidays are a minefield. Chocolates, cookies, candy canes. And there's all these places that you can just stop by, grab a quick snack at the gas station, whatever. And trust me, you want stuff around the tree, not stuff around your stomach. So the holidays are not always holidays, folks. So just let's try Nature Box here. Nature Box has over 100 delicious snacks. All snacks are made with high quality, simple ingredients. This means no artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners. It's easy. Just go to naturebox.com, choose your snack, and Nature Box will deliver them right to your doors. I love them for sure. They have all kinds of great snacks, but I like Asiago cheddar cheese crisps. Their crunchy barbecue twists are really good. All their nut selections are really good. Their beef jerkies are really good. I'm telling you, everything they have just tastes amazing. And right now, NatureBox is offering Bad Christian fans 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/badchristian. Seriously, it's easy. Just go to naturebox.com, choose your snacks, and NatureBox will deliver them right to your door. New snacks are added every month, inspired by new food trends, professional chefs, and customer feedback. I'm telling you, just like I said, I love my NatureBox snacks. That's naturebox.com/badchristian for 50% off your first order. naturebox.com/badchristian. Like, you would trade, you would trade in a minute to be back in Seattle, like, living... Just not job or anything. If you could live anywhere in America, that's where you would choose?
Yeah.
You like Seattle better than Nashville? And where else have you been? Birmingham?
Yeah, dude. Absolutely.
Or where were you in Alabama?
Yeah, Birmingham.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, we loved Seattle as a family. It was always, I don't know, there's just something mystical about it. It's maybe it you know, helped having been in Birmingham first. You know, you have the sort of southern, you know, southern thing versus the incredible epicness that's the Northwest, you know? It's just everything about it was surreal.
Yeah, it's hard to criticize.
For me, the when we moved from South Carolina to Seattle, the thing that got me about it was it really. I just felt like you said, mystical or something. It was because of the Goonies, the movie, the Goonies, like that, like being in like the whole. I know that was Portland and Oregon and area and stuff like that, but the green, the wet, all that stuff. It did feel like something. That I hadn't ever really experienced before. The landscape was different. You could get to the ocean. There's the mountains right there. And South Carolina in some ways is like that, but it looks different. You know, it doesn't look like the pine or the red clay of South Carolina and stuff like that. So the same thing for me. I always thought, ooh, Seattle's mystical and different. And, you know, there's people here and everybody.
There's people like Matt.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And my family told me 100% that they're all dangerous liberals that want to destroy God. Every single person there. So I was scared to death of everybody and thought it was beautiful and gorgeous and mystical and neat. Right. And I was like, oh, they're wooing me. I'm going to lose my religion here.
In this place. They're taking. Hey, by the way, are we live already?
Or are we just hanging out? Don't worry about it. We'll just keep on talking about whatever you want. Well, you know, we do interviews all the time, and it's more formal or whatever. But when you're talking to somebody you know, it's really nice to not over-prepare or plan what you're going to talk about. Yeah. And we don't have any plan at all.
Good.
And that's not because we don't take you seriously. It's because it's whatever we talk about is going to be nice and fun. So,
You know. Awesome.
Except for it's not going to be fun because I'm about to ask you or tell you I'm so sorry about your dad. If you want to start, tell me, can you give us an update there?
Are you recording on your end though? By the way,
I am on my end. Okay. Yeah, I'm on. I got my little garage band. Let me just verify now that you asked me. You know,
sorry, man.
That's all right.
No problem.
That's good. I think it's. Yep, I'm recording.
Okay. Cool.
Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, it's, thank you, Matt. It is, it's, you know, it's one of those weird things where talking about the surreal and mystical of Seattle, that's kind of how it feels losing a dad, you know, on Friday night. My dad's been struggling for the last 11 years with a congestive heart condition. And so it doesn't come as a surprise, you know, it wasn't a huge shock that my dad, finally did die. But still, when the news came Friday night, it's still, you know, it's like you still wrestle with, man, this is something about this feels both surreal and yet mystical, you know. For me, I was able to sort of say some things I really wanted to my dad before he died and hear some things from him before he died. So there was a real sense of closure. And if anything, I've been wrestling with the fact that I'm not responding like the stereotypical movie scene where your father dies and you break down weeping and you know, bawling and just, you know, kind of like you struggle to move on. If anything, my emotion has probably been much more stale and just kind of, I don't know. It's my Beth even asked me, she said, man, I think maybe you need a counselor, you know, like you're just so flat that part of me's wondered, like, is it that I'm ignoring some much deeper core issue, or is it like this grace bubble that God's put over me? I'm not sure. That's probably me just trying to justify my own issues. But no, it's hard. It's especially, of course, you know, it's of course, and especially challenging for mom and for, my brother and sisters, but I feel a ton of peace. You know, my dad loved Jesus and helped me love Jesus. And so there's a real spiritual bond and connection there that this isn't the end of the story. This is just an awkward middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. You speak about that, the weirdness of it, but it's really crazy the way when somebody's born or dies, I think people describe it as surreal. Like that week, that day, those hours are just... You know, I struggle to realize, to figure which is more right. Like, it's the rat race of a normal Wednesday. Is that normal? Or is the normal thing when you look at your family that is still here and see that? Which one?
Yeah.
I don't know which one of those is more normal, you know? Like, well, maybe that's always there and we're just ignoring, like, the real reality of love and relationships and tenderness that I can see and feel when it's a new birth or death, the profoundness of life, or that's just some temporary condition and this normal Tuesday rat race is normal. I don't know.
Yeah. Now there's definitely been a weird, if anything, the weirdest part for me has been throughout the day, I will sort of sense the reality of this, you know, the weighty, truth that I will never see my father this side of glory ever. And so that every once in a while that thought will hit me and it's like, you know, I do sense some sadness or just like, oh man, that's, wow, like that's really heavy. And then you, like you said, you just carry on with the rat race and it's like, oh, now I got to go mail Christmas cards or now I got to go get this or do this or go to this meeting. And so it's a really strange thing. Have either of you guys had parents that have died?
Yeah. My mom died in February. So.
Oh, that's right. Well, sorry.
Yeah, so, we've been talking about death a lot. I lost my dog died last week too, which was a big deal and stuff like that. So
it is a big deal.
I went through almost all my life with zero grief experience until last, you know, like 4 years. And it's weird. I mean, you know, I think you're right about movies and stuff paint you a certain way. And it's like, are you suppressing it? Are you dealing with it? Are you supposed to? Like, you think you're going to react one way and you react another. And, you know, it's a confusing thing, or it's a lot of it's new to me, but I you know, it's a reality that, you know, at our stage in life, you're going to continue to lose people. Like, that's just the way it's going to go. You're going to lose, either you're going to lose, I mean, I'll stay there if you want to. You're going to lose your spouse or they're going to lose you. You're going to lose your parents. You've lost your grandparents. You're going to lose all your pets. And that's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario, the order gets even more screwed up and you lose friends and kids and you know what I mean? But that, at least that first half of what I said is a guarantee. And it's weird.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. And we are conditioned in this day and age to, you know, with movies and with how connected we are, that it does feel like that, like even for your wife, it seems like maybe to her, you should be having this explosion of emotion and sadness and fear and upset and being unreconcilable or whatever like that.
Right.
And so to be calm almost feels like against the norm, but that maybe that could be norm. Like I've always thought about this too. Like it's a part of our culture because think about like say you could go all the way back to the 1400s, but just even think like 1700s or whatever. People lost their kids a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
they
was
lost,
very normal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, it was normal and it was sad, but it almost seemed like a harder time or whatever. But it was a thing that you were conditioned then to go, well, the chances of you having kids and all of them living is really slim. And right. So it became a part of normal life and you had more kids. So you could make sure the numbers were, you know, help you with the farm, whatever it might be. Right. I know I'm generalizing here, but we do live in a day and age now where everybody's so connected that you see somebody die every day. Mm. You know what I mean? And how do you feel about that? What does that mean? What does that mean about you and all that stuff? It's just, yeah. It's really tough. So, I mean, I think that you might, like your emotions and the way you're feeling and handling this is probably actually 100% normal, but you know, who knows? You know, right. Maybe you still do have to ask the question, what do I feel? You yeah. know, are you at all concerned like you're going to be walking around tomorrow and all of a sudden it's just going to hit you like a ton of bricks or anything like that? Or
not necessarily. I mean, I would, I mean, part of me kind of wants that to happen if I'm mm-hmm. honest, you know, like, cause I feel yeah. like that's probably what's expected of me that Chad just, right. you know, on this podcast, I break down and it's the craziest thing. And everyone's like, wow, I can't believe just how deep and emotional and, you know, sorrowful this guy can be. But at the same time, I only want that to happen if that's what's meant to happen, you know, and I certainly can't force emotions on myself or anyone yeah. else. But at the same time, I don't want to be restraining them either. Or I don't want to be doing anything that's keeping those emotions from happening or those feelings from going deeper. So Matt, for you, like what did you find yourself more leaning like stereotypical movie kind of experience? Like, did you find yourself breaking down often and just dealing with a lot of mourning and grief and sadness? Or what was your experience like?
Well, you know, the difference here, and this is an interesting topic. I didn't even know we were going to do this, but we've been talking
yeah,
about
I didn't
death
either,
a lot lately, but I'm interested yeah. enough to keep going. So the interesting thing that is very much in contrast with your situation is that it was a 100% out of the blue surprise.
Okay.
So,
right.
And it, huge but it difference. Also was heart. And my mom died of a heart attack, but it was a 100% surprise. Never in a million yep. years would I've expected it. So,
how old was she?
65.
Wow.
And so there was nothing to it whatsoever, but just to like try to respond and manage and like the fact of what does it mean to my dad, what my sister said, like
yeah.
those things were all critical. And so when it happened, I didn't feel any amount of like this happened to me. It was like happening to out there. I'm pretty cool when right. things get, you know, out of control or chaotic or whatever. So I was very much calm and collective and cool for that week about like, we need to do this. You got to do this. Who's this person? I got to get there. Who, you know, all the activity of it and the management of it and the sympathy for my dad was by far the dominant situation. So sure. I was more concerned with that than I was laying around myself, you know, so it would yeah. come and go in and out and stuff like that. And there's the real sense, absolutely real sense, which I feel somewhat guilty about, that it was so sudden and so final that there's such a good thing about that, as in there was no suffering or agony. And
yeah.
honestly, she's not something I have to worry about in the future. Which makes me right. feel really guilty to admit, but it's true. Like,
yeah.
there's
yeah.
not some long-suffering illness in her future. It's done. And there's right. something final about that, too. And those are weird things to weigh and think about. But that's kind of my experience that's different than yours. So,
yeah. You know. No, that's good. Thank you for sharing that.
All right, sorry guys. Before we go any further with this, I want to take a second and tell you about Pro Flowers. Now, Pro Flowers is good for me, and I mean really good, because I got this particular problem, especially around the holidays, and that is I live very far away from tons of people that I love and care about. People I'm not going to see at the holidays, people in different places, family, friends, stuff like that. And Pro Flowers helps me to, you know, take care of them, make an impression. And sending flowers for me is a great way that I can express my feelings and holiday wishes that's better than a gift or a card. It's a living flowers sent right to them. And of course, you get to, you know, customize a note for them there. It's a physical life thing to you know, to really make an impression on somebody in the holidays. And what's really cool about it is you can, you know, you decide the day you want the flowers to come. So just in the middle of the holiday season is a great time to reach out to somebody. A bouquet or festive plant from ProFlowers is perfect because it's not the same old traditional gift. It says so much more. Their best-selling candy cane roses are a great option for a holiday gift. It could be a December birthday or an anniversary or just because. You can always go with their classic mini Christmas tree that comes with lights and ornaments. Very good. So no matter what you choose, here's the best part. Our listeners get 20% off any ProFlowers bouquet of $29 or more. So ProFlowers bouquets and plants are guaranteed to stay fresh. I got one the other day, last week, and they still look great. They're sitting on my kitchen table, and you control the delivery date. There's more bloom for your buck, big, beautiful flowers, more stems for your money, and long-lasting freshness. So to get 20% off all bouquets of $29 or more this holiday season, go to ProFlowers.com and use our code BADCHRISTIAN at checkout. That's ProFlowers.com, code BADCHRISTIAN. All right.
All right, so we got you on here. We've had you. We've worked with you a lot. Now it's funny because we worked with you, we didn't. You were never our A&R guy at Tooth and Nail, but no. Of course we knew who you were and we hung out and all that
right,
stuff. But now,
right.
So hadn't come in contact a lot, and then now the last year we have a lot because we worked on the Labeled podcast with you and did an interview, which I thought I loved that episode, by the way.
Oh man, me too.
And so you've done a ton of stuff now, and now so I was telling people before, so you. Worked at Tooth and Nail. You've been a record label dude for a long time. Then you started your own label again with Come and Live. And now you do some missionary stuff. And we had you and Steiger on. That's probably been 6 months ago or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds
And now you've written
right.
a book called 1,000 Risks.
Yeah. Yeah, 1,000 Risks.
And first question I have, what made you want to write a book? And it had to be just unbelievable. Was it the hardest thing you've ever done? Out of all of this crazy stuff you've done, is this the hardest?
Yeah, but my thought was if Aaron Lunsford can write a book, then I can write a book. he was my inspiration. No, seriously though, he was. I read his book and I was like, you know what? What I love about Aaron is the fact that this is the Aaron that I remember sitting down with at the label or talking to at shows or Warped Tour or whatever, and every page sounds like maybe a slightly dirtier Aaron, you know, language wise and what I remember, but this is the same guy. And so that was really encouraging. And I don't know, man, I guess about 3 years ago, I felt like Jesus just gave me this intuitive thought that I was meant to write some of my stories down and some of the story down. And so that began this process of, well, I guess I'll try, you know?
That's interesting. So, you know, when you go through to like write about your own self, do you feel, do you know what I mean? Like, do you feel a little bit?
I felt mostly excited because it's actually really easy to write about myself. You know, at the end of the day, I am an egotistical douche.
That's what I was getting at.
Apart from Jesus would be so arrogant and so boastful and prideful that it's just like, oh man, Chad is just, you know, like overflowing with self. Who wants more self? But man, thankfully, I hired an editor and I invited my wife to go through the book. And between editor and wife, they pulled out every stupid idea, statement, thought, whatever. And they also, the editor and several other people said, you know, We really don't believe you're supposed to write a memoir, basically a book about yourself. You're supposed to write a book that really challenges and empowers others to recognize the grace of God at work in their lives. And so it actually, man, I feel like I was really set free from writing about me. And once I was able to realize that the purpose of writing is me serving someone else. So how can I best serve my reader was the mindset that I eventually took on, and it liberated me from all of the stupidity that I would have brought to the table otherwise.
Well, let's get some examples of that. What is something that you would do with that mindset? What was a mistake you had made, something that came out and something that went in as a result?
Well, for example, the title 1,000 Risks, in the original draft, I did not explain the title or the thesis of the book until about chapter 7. So you had to read 6 chapters before you had any real idea what in the world I was talking to you about. And the first 6 chapters were Chad did this. Chad grew up here. Chad worked with this band. Chad lived here. Chad, Chad, Chad. And so when I sat down with the editor, she said, you know, I feel like all that stuff needs to go. And you need to start with what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And so for me, that was, how do I help other, whether it's someone who already follows Jesus and wants to follow him much more, or whether it's someone who is struggling to follow Jesus at all, or wherever someone finds themselves, how can I write to them and serve their story? And so I think that, six chapters were originally about me, and now they're gone. And so it just starts out, you know, here's where this thing is going.
What is the thesis? Can you sum the thesis up in a sentence or two?
Yeah. To sum it up, the question I was trying to answer was whether or not God can use regular, seemingly average, ordinary folk like you and me to change the world. And how much does fear get in the way of any kind of change, potential mm-hmm. change happening? So the basic thesis is that Christianity was always meant to be lived from a perspective of risk, where we are consistently, even, you know, as Christians, it's a one time, like, hey guys, all right, I'm going to believe in Jesus. And that's a big risk. But then the next day you wake up and you've got to choose at that point to still say, I'm going to believe in Jesus, or I'm going to live, you know, I'm going to move to Seattle, or I'm going to write a book, or I'm going to marry this person, or whatever the risk might be. So I think it really came down to what I found missing in my own Christian journey was an absence of risk. And so the question just for me was, how can I reintroduce risk, and would that change anything about my own journey and experience with God?
Mm-hmm. Now, I was going to ask with the risk, like, so you, everything we're supposed to take risks or whatever, like, are you, so you're talking about even small to big, what are like,
yeah,
you, these are stories about you. What's like a small risk you've taken, and like, what was one of the bigger ones you've taken?
Well the bigger risk I've had to answer for you, Chad, the big risk obviously is heavy investment in Bitcoin is what he said. Obviously, yeah, talking, this is basically a Bitcoin book.
Yeah. Go ahead. That is so good. That's exactly what I was thinking. That's
financial.
We're totally on the same level. But the Bitcoin thing aside, I've really been into collecting action figures. That's been my next big risk. You know, how can I outdo one another in collecting toys? I think that here's an example of a tiny risk. Yesterday, my aunt reaches out to me and she says, hey, how are you doing? My dad's sister. So how are you doing with dad passing, all this? You know, I love you, care for you. So I texted her back. And right as I got her text, I sensed this really pronounced pain in my right ear. And I was like, that's weird. And as soon as I opened the text, it was gone. And I thought, well, maybe I just have some random ear thing. I don't know what it could be. But I texted her and I said, hey, this is really random, but do you have anything going on with your right ear that's a pain or a discomfort? And she said, that's the weirdest thing ever. For 3 days, I have had pain and discomfort in my right ear, specifically, not my left, and I have no clue what it is. And so I said, well, Jesus, I don't believe Jesus just showed me that as a little tiny risk for me to take and not also heal you. So we prayed together, her ear is totally fine. So that's an example of a tiny risk where it was a thought, it was a feeling, I stepped out.
But it's
kind of
embarrassing to step, like a lot of people would have just not said anything if that came to mind.
Which is oftentimes what I do as well. And and I know that route very clearly because I've made so many, part of the book is basically, here are these incredible examples of Jesus performing miracles of healing, of salvation, mm-hmm. of deliverance. And then here are all these examples of Chad being an idiot. So all kinds of silly things that I stepped out taking a risk, thinking I was getting somewhere, only to realize, man, that was really awkward.
Well, I've seen, I mean, I know you have so many of those stories. I've been around you and seen you get a word and say, I've seen you do it to a waitress before, Olive Garden or something, stuff like that, where you just get a word and you say, hang on a second, and then stuff like that. Yeah. So you must have those impulses a lot. Yeah. And sometimes you get them and you think they're wrong, or the person, what's the other side of that?
Hopefully the person I'm sharing it with is wrong. That way I feel better about myself, you know, as long as I'm always right, then we're good. I'm just kidding. That's horrible.
But sometimes you step out and say something and it's just an embarrassing flop.
No, absolutely. I think just this morning I was at coffee with a friend and we were talking about this stuff, and he said, man, the table next to us, I feel like there's something going on with them. And I said, all right, well, man, let's go over there and see. And so I went over and I said, hey, I know this is weird. Do any of you guys have anything going on in your, like, in your esophagus or your, like, chest area?
What,
like,
could you feel that? Like you could feel, like, just, why'd you say the esophagus? I mean, where would you get that?
It was a thought. No, that one was more of a thought in my head. And so I just saw like maybe like some kind of respiratory problem or what would you call it? Like breathing issues, allergies, something like that. And so I spill all this out and about six people are looking at me like I am the weirdest freak on the planet. And I can like hear this happening and I can like out of body experience, watch myself. And I'm like, man, you are such a freak. but I shared all that and they said, nah, went around the whole group was like, nah, we're fine. I said, man, you guys have pain. You guys have pain anywhere else? They said, no. I said, man, well, are you guys all college kids? They said, no, we all finished college. I said, man, well, are you guys
strike
all
three.
Literally ever? I had like five questions that I thought.
Hang nail, headache. Come on. Stub toe. And, what you got?
Right. Nothing. They were like perfect humans with no imperfections anywhere. So that's a great example of a time where I got up and I said, man, thank you guys for letting me try, you know, because I really appreciate your kindness and your grace and smiling at me. But you know, I think that so a lot of the risks I write about involve me stepping out towards someone, like when I was on a plane, I can't remember heading where, and the lady sitting next to me was a Universalist lady from Seattle, which is perfect, right? Everybody in Seattle is Universalist, so yeah. the same stereotype, you know, Toby, that you assumed you'd find is so easy sometimes to put in place. But I said, hey, you know, may I pray for you? And she said, well, I don't know how that goes. And I said, oh, it's okay. It's really simple. You just give me your hands and we'll hold hands and I'll just pray like this little blessing over you. And so we hold hands on the airplane and we're up, you know, 30,000 feet up.
Wait, you're that guy? She got seated next to the guy who wants to hold her hand and pray the whole flight.
Yeah, dude, I am routinely that guy.
Yeah.
So I am definitely the awkward person on the plane you do not want to be seated next to unless you're having a really bad day and you need to laugh at somebody. But, yeah. We held hands and she starts praying this like positive, kind blessing, like, universe, I thank you for bestowing rainbows and double rainbows upon Chad. And and immediately I realized that she had misunderstood what I had said and had thought I said, can you pray for me? So, you know, so there's all kinds of crazy, goofy stories of, but man, I witnessed more miracles in the 2 years where I took the 1,000 risks than ever before in my life. And so there's a great balance, you know, to the whole thing. And
do you think, like, going up to the table and being wrong about everything, do you think that's just as much God? Like, the thought that pops in my head is, if God is doing that and using you kind of like that wishbone or prophetic or whatever it might be, then he would sometimes make it be a miss or else you would take credit for it or something. Like, do you feel that way? Like, are you glad when stuff like that happens? Cause it actually keeps it at risk level than at comfort level.
Well, no, that's a great question. I mean, deep down, no, I'm not glad when those times happen because I want to be right. And I want people to have powerful encounters with God, but I do think that God has such a great sense of humor that he probably knew today was the Bad Christian podcast recording. And he knew that if I didn't have, you know, like some little stroke of humility, this thing could really go awry. So, I think that oftentimes God's just wondering, you know, Chad, are you willing to take that step even if you look like a complete idiot? And for me to walk away just saying, you know what, it wasn't about whether or not I was right. It was about whether or not I attempted to love somebody. And so my idea going into this was, how do I love people the way that Jesus says we can love people? And what does that look like? And how does someone that doesn't naturally do it very well learn?
Mm-hmm. Do you get pushback from stuff like this? Like, for example, somebody could easily say, oh, you sound like a psychic. And you would say, you know, I don't know what you believe about psychics or whatever, but I always think they're a little good. What's the pushback you get ever from stuff like when you say something wrong? Do you ever sit beside somebody on a plane and they're like really disrespectful or don't appreciate the risks you're taking?
I think that generally speaking, the answer is no, not because I'm always right, but because I think that God's taught me the hard way how to put myself low and how to serve someone so that I'm approaching them not from God has a message for you. I am the person delivering it to you. Now listen up. I've tried to build rapport. I've tried to hear their story. And if it, you know, a lot of times it's someone's willing to talk or they're not willing to talk. So if they're willing, then it's just, you know, natural conversation in the flow. And I begin the whole time I am asking the Holy Spirit, is there anything you want to be saying to this person? And sometimes I get very, very pointed thoughts and I begin sharing them. Hey, I usually say, may I share this thought that I believe God gave me for you. And, and if they say no, then that's it. Hey, I totally respect that. And I'm not forcing myself on you. But I also will, I'll also try to be very clear when I do screw up and just acknowledge that and apologize. Man, I'm so sorry. I was in Costa Rica a couple of weeks ago, and there was a girl at this meeting whose brother had a brain tumor. And I told her publicly at the meeting that I believe Jesus was going to supernaturally heal her brother's brain tumor without surgery. So I said, but I need you to tell me whether or not that happens, because if it doesn't happen, then I need to repent to God and I need to repent to you and to the people I was with. So that did not happen, which means I'm held I'm held to a level of accountability for that statement that is not just me walking away like, well, too bad it didn't happen. It's all right for me to be wrong every now and again. Instead, it's to put myself lower and just, man, I'm so sorry.
Because that could be seen as, you know, harmful, causing harm.
Absolutely.
Like false hope
Absolutely.
For people and stuff like that. So that makes sense. And too often people get, well, I mean, the fact that you spent this whole part of the interview thus far talking about you being a screw up at stuff and being wrong, and that part is very refreshing, because the opposite of that would be if you're one of those guys that you only see the positive and people want to believe the positive and you do that and you disregard the negative, then you wind up one of those guys on stage that slings your coat and people fly backwards. I mean, that's where that goes if it goes unchecked, obviously, when both parties want it to be one thing. Kind of thing like that. So the accountability part is something you don't often see in that. But what do you consider to be, or anything that you would say, is what's some of the clearer things to you that are obviously miracles? And I'm not asking for scientific or empirical evidence, but from your view, what seems like clear evidence of miraculous things that you have seen?
Well, when when someone is either born blind or has developed degenerative blindness or glaucoma or any number of vision problems that can be verified by family members and friends, and then can be verified right there, you know, where you are. That's pretty, man. I've seen blind eyes opened. I've seen deaf ears open. I've seen a guy in the Bronx get up out of a wheelchair after having his legs crushed by a delivery truck. I've seen deathly responses to different allergies totally cured, and then people consuming whatever would have caused them to go into anaphylactic shock, cancers, tumors. Oh man, I came up with a list in the book because there's so many things that I've seen God do, and that doesn't mean that I always see God do that. I feel like there's like what you're saying, Matt. There's such a unfortunate side to this, even as we're talking about it, that is the skeptical, cynical side, which says, well, man, like. If that stuff really is happening, why in the world do we not see more of it? And I think part of it is because we oftentimes are are either operating too much out of pride and not enough out of humility. And oftentimes we're not recording what's happening. You know, it happens in a moment and mm-hmm. you aren't like, oh, there's cameras, here we go. But now, you know, to me, to this day, the most exciting, thrilling miracle story is anytime somebody says, I want to surrender my life to Jesus. You know, like that makes, in my mind, that is the craziest thing anyone could ever do, because it involves such a shift of where the heart and head is into, I'm going to place trust in Jesus as Savior. That blows me away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes sense. So there's a lot of stuff for me. Like, I'm not an anti-miracle guy, but I'm a very skeptical guy. So I, there's no reason to try to disqualify somebody's direct experience, especially anecdotally. I am confused why we couldn't. Seems like there'd be something possibly measurable or empirical if you really look for it. But I don't know.
No, there's a lot of that stuff out there. It's pretty crazy. The more I've gotten into exploring Jesus's heart for healing, the more I've discovered that there are both really, really crazy stories and very wild reactions that people have had that are measurable. So there's a guy he wrote a book called Divine Healing Made Simple, and he just goes by Praying Medic, and he's a paramedic out of Arizona that just offers to pray for people he transports. And then it's cool because oftentimes what we're not hearing is a medical side of this, you know, from a doctor's perspective or a nurse's perspective or a professional's perspective, what's going on. So, I married a nurse, but I have zero, understanding of the body from a medical point of view. I just am in awe that God uses someone like me to sometimes deliver sweet gifts to people that need them.
Mm-hmm. How does your, speaking of like your wife and your family and stuff, how do they respond to stuff? Are they like, man, can't we just have dinner? Do you have to talk to the Olive Garden, you know, server right now? And does it ever cause anything like that? Like, are you always on?
No, I don't think I am always. I think I would like to always be on, but I think that there are times where I just, I've like anybody else, I've had a bad day. Or my dad's died, or, you know, right. Something's happened right. In life where I don't, where it's like, man, I know I'm supposed to love you right now, but I can't, I'm not going to pretend, because that's not going to help you. Right. And that would never be Jesus. So I think from my family, when I was in the middle of the thousand risks, my son and I would go out sometimes and just offer to pray for people. Like, hey, how can we pray for you? And we saw God do some really crazy stuff. So my whole family has seen Jesus do some wildly ridiculous things in people's lives and bodies. But there is a tension, and there is a balance between concentrating my focus on who is in front of me, my daughter, my son, my wife, and not just bouncing around. Well, oh, there's a person. You know, like the people sometimes say, I'm a lot like Doug, the dog from the movie Up, and I can just like squirrel and there I am. And it's true, because it is hard for me not to notice sometimes people and stuff going on. But man, I feel like I'm learning. You know, it's like anything, you've got to learn. And I've got to, I apologize to Beth and the kids a lot, you know, and just like, man, sorry that I did this, or that I didn't do this, or that I got distracted, and, you know, help me. I've invited them into the story, you know, help me to be the guy that God's called me to be, and not someone who's an imposter, you know, or just pretending.
You, I mean, you're the number one person that I know probably that proclaims Jesus and talks about Jesus and tries to, even though you readily admit that you fail and stuff like that, you talk about Jesus a lot, and you will pray, and you will, I mean, you know, you're almost like a hippie person, is what my dad would call you or whatever, you know, one of those Jesus people or whatever like that. Yeah. But what is it that like, I mean, having success in the music world and having failures in the music world and successes and being a light person and a known person, what is it that, like, are you drawn to the healings? Are you drawn, what is it about the Jesus story that is compelling you to go to other countries and to get up and take a risk or something like that? What is it that keeps you motivated doing this? Is it just a desire to get people to heaven? I don't want to answer for you, but I mean,
it's good.
Seriously motivated that way. I mean, you will talk about Jesus no matter what.
Yeah. Do you think other people should do, like, you know, you're living it this way, but it's, do you think other people should be, is that the idea to get more people to do like you do?
Well, the idea is in my, from my perspective, is a really simple one. It is to love Jesus, to love God, to love others. So if my intention is, I got to get you into heaven, I got to get you healed, I got to get you set free, then I'm not sure how I can genuinely love someone where they're at, especially when they're saying, I don't want heaven. I don't want to be set free. I don't want healing. I don't want, and because that does happen. And so, at the core, the desire, you know, all of this really came, and there's the preface of the book basically is called The Risks that Preceded 1000. And it talks about me leaving Tooth and Nail and all of that. All of this started around the time that we were all together at Tooth and Nail, where my heart cracked open a little more for God and for loving God and for loving people. And the story of Jesus was so moving to me and so compelling based on what he had offered of himself that I just like, man, I want to be more like him. Even if I never do it very well, I still would like to be more like him. Even if at the end of my days, someone, you know, I die and I'm just like in La La Forever Land, and there's no heaven and there's no God and Jesus or nothing, there's still that I still became convinced that the way of love and learning even awkwardly to treat others the way I want to be treated is a better road for me to go down. And so, no, it's not, I mean, of course there's a part of me that wants to see others experiencing God in every way they are meant to, but I don't think it works for me to try to convince you or someone else that you ought to believe in God if the Holy Spirit isn't first authoring that work. Because if I can convince you that God's real, then somebody smarter than me will surely come along and convince you that he's not. So yeah, there's got to be more at stake here than just Chad saying, guys, believe in Jesus. Either Christianity is what it claims to be, or more specifically, because Christianity these days is a really scary idea, Jesus is who he claims to be. And he still maintains all the power in heaven and down here, or he's not. And so I think that's been one of my pursuits. Like, man, if Jesus is really real, then I've got to see more supernatural activity in my life and the lives of others, because that ought to be what life looks like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I'm in a similar position, although I don't think I manifest at all like you. I don't know if it's different gifts or unwilling to risk or if I've got that shut down. But I agree very much with what you're saying there. If it's intellectual argument, then I don't know what that's even worth. I don't think. I mean, that's not why I believe. I mean, that's just not why. I believe because it's something that is indescribable and different. It's just different. It's fundamentally different than that. And I wouldn't ever want or expect anybody not to believe if they didn't have a subjective experience that it couldn't really be relayed or described or apologetics to achieve or socioeconomic power to achieve. None of those things seem to matter. If Christianity's real, then it is. And that's really difficult and uncomfortable how to wrestle with that. But it can't be something that is just beat into people. It can't be something that's about an agenda. And I mean, you know, even the way you say that about it's Christianity. What'd you say? Christianity's you said something about it. But Jesus is not your story. You separated Christianity from Jesus, but you said a scary thing right now, something like that. It is. I mean, I think it's almost as simple to say, I don't really care about Christianity. I care about Jesus. And if that if that rubs you the wrong way, That's interesting. You know, like if it rubs you the wrong way, how about this? I don't give a shit about Christianity. I care about Jesus. If that rubs you the wrong way, then maybe, you know, that's worth investigating, you know, kind of a thing. And I mean, that's not a strong stance of mine or anything, but it is, we're certainly at the point in culture where it's worth really analyzing what Christianity has to do with Jesus and doesn't. Because there's it's very complicated, as you bring up.
And oftentimes the world has not seen the presence, the love, or the power of Jesus. They have seen Christianity twisted into something it was never meant to be. And so my dream, my desire is like, man, God, if just today I could love one person a little more like Jesus loves, then maybe I have a chance at helping someone experience what I've experienced, and just reminding someone that they're amazing, that they're a gift, that they matter, that their story is incredible, that there's purpose, you know, all these things. That's really been my prayer, and that's kind of what started the whole thing. You know, God, just give me one person today that I can love. And some days that works out stunningly well, and some days it's the weirdest, most awkward, you know, conversation over coffee with a bunch of people at a table that are just looking at me crazy. Toby, what are you thinking?
Well, I was just thinking, like, you sound too nice. Like, what? So you're doing this healing, going around healing people, doing all this stuff. What's the stuff that gets you? Like, are you get pissed off at people that didn't vote for Roy Moore? Or look, you're in Alabama, aren't you? Like, you know, like what's the stuff, like you get a word from God, but like you're like, man, I don't want to help that person because they're like, what makes you mad? When are you like, what's like the aggravated, mad, bad Chad?
You've been really forthcoming about your dark sides overall in your life, which we love and appreciate, and that's why
helped inspired me.
Well, what's current darkness in Chad's life? What don't you want to talk about right now? Is what Toby's asking.
Probably politics. I mean, I think that the current perspective, and the statement I made about Christianity earlier that you were referring to that I can't remember exactly, is essentially referring to a right-winged Christian point of view where women are mistreated and it's okay, or where you can basically get away with any immoral act and still be in a position of power, or you can believe things about people and about the core of who they are as humans, Christianity or religion or Jesus or anything aside, that drives me nuts. And I don't think that social media needs another opinion, which is why I try, unless it's Jesus, I'm staying quiet. But I think because you asked that, it's really hard for me to love our president. And Jesus says, love your enemies. And it's very hard for me to wrap my heart around someone like Trump and go, Jesus, please, man, please pour out your Holy Spirit on this man and convict him of sin and bring him closer to you and use his life and transform him and change the world through him. You know, all those kind of things. As I'm praying that, I do genuinely feel compassion, but it's like, that's not normal. I normally like, man, what a idiot. What a complete, like, I can't believe this, you know, like, are you kidding me? So I think it's more like, my struggle is probably more with the man than it is with man, you know, like I have occasionally I have been very, very sternly warned or rebuked or rejected or whatever you want to call it. But usually it's because I'm the one putting myself out there and like, hey, excuse me, I'm interrupting someone's day. And very rarely does someone say, you know, dude, get the hell away from me. What's wrong with you? You know, but so anyway, I think that the current state of our country and our country's leadership is a very hard thing for me to wrap my head around.
So like if you got a feeling that Trump had a bad hip, you might would choose not to pray for him or help him.
I would have to ask. I would have to ask Jesus for more grace to pray for that hip to be healed. But the truth is, I ought to be willing to say, God, even with those I hate, or even with those who I see as an enemy, I don't, it's not, I use that's too strong a word. It's not hate, but it is seeing someone as an enemy. It like in some ways it's easier for me to envision laying my life down for a Iraqi hardcore jihadist that wants to blow me up than it would be for Donald Trump. And that's
a neat point.
That ought not be my perspective, but that's true. And that's, and so that's where I've got to say, God, please give me more grace. Cause we're called to pray for our leaders, you know, we're called to, we're called to serve, you know? So it's like, I gotta, that's where I have issues. I gotta let some stuff go and ask God for help. And
I've thought actually, in this climate that we have, especially this political climate, it like maybe God did give us Trump in a way to make us realize, wait a minute, we can pray for our leaders, but we also need to be honest about it as well, and not just blindly support because they're on the red team or they're on the blue team or whatever it might be. Like I've wondered that because there's part of me that likes the chaos that has happened because of Trump, and then I am the same way. Like I don't know if I really want. Like I don't think I would enjoy being around him or like him or think that he's really a good guy or whatever. Now at the same time, that doesn't mean everything he's done is bad. Some of the stuff he's done is good or whatever. And so I think there's a chance that it could be that way. Like to soften my own heart.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, what if Trump's president to make me a better person? Not you know what I mean? Like seriously, because it's very easy to hate him or to wish ill or like you said, like in some ways it's easier. There are other enemies I might more easily pray for,
or
hope better for. So.
Right.
That's kind of crazy. So your book, tell us the release of your book, when it's out, and anything else you want to tell us about A Thousand Risks.
Yeah, thanks. It came out last Tuesday. It's on Amazon, or you can find out more at chadisliving.com. But it's really, I feel totally privileged at the opportunity to have written stories down and to share the highs and the lows of my journey, you know? And so the whole thing is meant to encourage somebody, whether they love Jesus and are pursuing him with all their hearts, or they're running with everything away from Jesus because of their experience, is just to say, man, you still are loved and we're still in this together. And what an opportunity, what a joy to be with you in life, even if we completely disagree.
Right on. Well, Chad, thanks for being a buddy.
Where can everybody get it at?
On Amazon.
Amazon. Okay.
Amazon, chadisliving.com. Sure. Yeah, thanks for being a buddy with us, Chad, and participating in all the different stuff
thanks
we do.
Thanks
we
for
always
this
enjoy catching up. And sorry again about your dad and to your whole family.
Yeah. Thanks. That means the world. I love you guys and appreciate your time.
All right.
Thanks, Chad.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, man.
Okay. See ya.
See ya.
Okay, everybody. That was Chad Johnson.
Chad Johnson.
Enjoyed catching up with him. Joey had to run out there, so he'll be back in just a second, I think, actually. But what you got to say? Tell me anything else here? Burning a hole in your brain?
Burning a hole in my brain?
Anything else you want to discuss? It's your podcast. Joey's not back yet, so we've got a minute. If you don't got nothing, we'll just move right on.
Well, I do have something. When I talked to Chad, it's weird because we probably should have went into this a little bit, but I didn't want to make it about me. Everybody go check out his book and get it. And Chad's an awesome guy. I wish I wasn't so skeptical about stuff. Mm-hmm. I really do take the skeptical side, especially with healing and stuff like that. Because part of me goes, well, one thing is it is no matter what, only temporary, right? Like, I mean, even if you are healed from cancer or a tumor or anything like that, you are going to die. So it's not, there is no official healing until we, you know, going on Christian biblical terms, until after we die. Then you're healed and you're in the next life and all that stuff.
Yep.
So the healing, like I know that Chad isn't lying. He's seen people healed. And at the same time, there's a skeptical side of me that goes, well, I don't know. I mean, is it hit or miss? Is it just numbers? Is it, you know, like I hate that as I get older, I guess what I'm saying is as I get older, I'm scared I'm getting more grizzled and hard and less able to tap into that joy.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
like how do I hop it back into that? Like, for example, if it happened personally, like if one of our kids got sick or anything like that, I would turn to God and pray for healing and ask him, please, 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 please.
Mm-hmm.
At each step away from my family, just to a friend, then to a friend of a friend, a friend of a friend, I don't,
That's right.
More skeptical, and I don't care even. I don't even want to spend time praying for that person or whatever. And like, I dislike that I have that feeling inside of me of uncaring or unbelief, even though I believe people can be healed. I do believe that.
Yeah.
I do believe that there can be miracles. I believe that when there's no other place to turn, that our prayers can be answered. And I also know that they can't be.
Yeah.
I believe they can be. I know that they can't be sometimes too, or aren't.
Yeah.
I know that there are times where people have prayed for somebody with cancer and that person died. That has happened in my own life. And at the same time, like Jess had cancer and I prayed to God and God, you know, I believe was a part of that and helped in the healing. But at the same time, you know, her cancer might've been different than somebody that was stage 4 or 5, whatever.
Yeah. I wish abuses of that were more clear, but they're not all necessarily abuses, and you have to leave room for that. If you believe anything can be a miracle, real, but there's something about Christianity that I really dig on a fundamental level. I don't know if it's because it's true or just because it suits me, but the punk, you know, non-standard chaotic lifestyle, when a Christian is living in that, I don't know if it's just they like it or not, but I'll believe, or I'll go here, or I won't do savings, or I don't care where I live, or we'll do this for now, and we'll do this for now. All those huge risk itself is just like, aside from even spirituality, just risk is fun. Like, let's move to Seattle, let's start a band, let's try something that nobody else would try. Like, that to me demonstrates faith, but it's also just a pet thing of mine. I just like it. Like, will you go? Will you try it? Will you do it? Can you? Like, I'm always attracted to that personality in a general way. Somebody will do, you know, the non-standard person. And it seems like if people really believe, they would act more that way. So I validate that mentality no matter what. Right. No matter what I think about healing. I wish I'd seen some healing, but dang, I certainly don't try. I don't ever pay for anybody to get healed on an airplane. So what would I know? I can't say anything else about that other than,
I mean,
abuses are clear to me, but that,
you know. Some people have heard this, my own personal story, but Jess and I, had trouble having kids and we had to have IUI. Is that right?
IUD is the other one. IVF. Yep. Sorry. IUD is.
We had the first step.
That's the block.
We had the first step. So it was expensive, but that's the way we thought we were supposed to have kids. And so Ruby, our first, was through that, and then waited about 2 years and decided to go back, and it was worse. Like, my sperm count was super low. Really bad low. Jess has one closed fallopian tube. I don't think she minds me talking about all this. I have to say a lot of shit on this podcast. So it was real bad. Like, we got a call from the doctor that said, listen, your sperm count's so bad that you guys need to start thinking about either adoption or go to the next step or whatever, which is like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And I just felt terrible. I mean, doctors gave me a medical diagnosis that we couldn't have kids on our own. And I felt like the Holy Spirit, God himself, came to me and said, listen, do you believe? I could tell the story way more, but basically it was, you know, stop whining and thinking you're worthless and all this stuff. I'm God. You're going to have a kid. I believe fully that God, Holy Spirit, moved in my life and said, you're going to have a kid. Don't worry about it. And then 2 weeks later, we were pregnant naturally.
You're like Abraham, my friend. That's what he told Abraham.
Exactly. Yeah, in a way. The Abrahamic story, right? Abram story. But anyway, so I've seen it in my own life. Now, here's what I'm saying. Once again, as you move farther and farther away from that day, I go, well, maybe the doctors are wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen it. I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's an old Burt Reynolds movie, and he gets out to sea, and he's like, he wants to live, and so he starts praying. He's like, God, if you help me get back to land, I will, I'll give all my money to the church and all this stuff. And as he gets closer and closer to the shore, he gets less and less and less to finally get to the shore. And he's like, he's not even going to even give anything to God.
That's really good. Yeah, I saw that. That one's called Cannonball Run.
No, it's not. It is not called Cannonball Run. But anyway, so that feels like me. Like, the farther you get away from a miracle, the less you want to say it's a miracle, and the more you want to trust your brain and logic and all that stuff. So I love the idea of miracles. I love the idea of just something miraculous and amazing and God-filled happens. And I hate that my brain oftentimes goes, don't fall for that, because. Like, what's the problem? Like, that's the thing that I hate about myself is, what's wrong with believing in a miracle? Who cares? Like, yeah. it's, you know, like, now it does turn bad. It, like, that's why I appreciated what Chad said, is if he actually said, I'm sorry, I want to be held responsible with this, not be careless with this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, if you just go, hey, don't worry about going to the doctor. You're going to be healed. That person could die or something crazy like that.
Well, okay. I tell you what is a miracle, though, is the BC Club and the amount of support it has been. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you another miracle is that it stayed and grown over time. And then the biggest miracle of all being that new people are still joining. It's good. You got some names of people, you want to read them?
I sure do. Like, it's better than the return on Bitcoin. It's unbelievable, the BC Club. You get an extra you guys get an extra episode. You get Facebook. You get all kinds of stuff. It's a miraculous thing to be in.
The Facebook group alone is probably the biggest
benefit. It's worth the trip.
But all this stuff's at thebcclub.com is where you go to sign up and actually officially. I know you've been listening forever, but just join the group, you dummies.
Yeah. All right. One of the things is you get your name read on the podcast like these fools. Dallas Toth, Jake Rawls, Matt Morton, Nick Woods, Kanan Daniels, Michael Fenwick, Catherine Sutherland, Augustine Ray, Tyler Moore, and Jonathan Woods are just to name a few of the people in the BC Club that just make the world go around, even though the world is flat.
Yeah, it is. I looked into it a little bit. Turns out it's flat.
Hey, you know what I thought about the world being flat, though? I thought, seriously, why would everybody that is a flat earther vote the most trusted flat earther, and then we just pay for them to fly up in a rocket and look at the
Earth? Who's going to pay for that?
The government?
Yeah, you trust them? They'd put you in
something.
But you
could stop a conspiracy.
No, yeah, I don't know if you could
stop
it. No, but
a trusted person that you think is... Like, if I went up in a rocket, you would trust me when I came back, wouldn't you? Or you're saying I'd be drugged or mind manipulated or something?
If you put a flat earther in a rocket and sent them up there, they would just be thinking about how you had simulated the windows. They're not real windows, they're screens. It's a projection. They would be just, that's all they'd be doing. And that's what they would find to be the case.
So there's no chance. It's like, so basically, there's no chance of proving it or anything. It's like just trying to talk to somebody on Twitter. It's just it ain't going to work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's certain modes you can be in. It's not like, okay, think about it this way. If you got into a fist fight and you've already thrown one punch at the person and then he's throwing a punch at you and you're about to throw your third punch, what line of logic might lead you to believe that he's actually right in that altercation? At that point, or is there any possibility you're not going to continue to swing fists with this dude who you've hit and he's hit you? It's not, you're not open at that point to, you're in it. You're so in it that it does not, you're not going to see if somebody yells a good point. Yeah, but maybe he felt this way. It's not going to matter to you. The facts are no longer relevant when you're in that kind of mode. And most conspiracy theories have that conveniently, though, in there that they're not really falsifiable. There's no way to falsify the claims that they make is another big problem with it. But, you know, again, I think these people are, I don't know how we're talking about flat earth, but they're trying to express something that should be listened to. It's a rejection of something else. I mean, the facts and the flat earth stuff. I'm telling you, there's more to this whole thing that we could learn from, but we're not going to learn that the earth is flat, of course. But what is causing this phenomenon of people to buy into it is a reasonable question. It's not just, a bunch of idiots. I don't think of it that way.
Right.
There's something more going on with our society and ourself. I don't know. So anyway.
Amen. Amen. And amen. All right. We're out of here.
See ya, people!
Well, hello there, friends. This is Devin from Emory. That's right, I said Devin from Emory. And I got some good news for you guys. In case you haven't heard, Emory is playing a show in Nashville, Tennessee, on Saturday, January 27th, with a few bands that you might know as well. First band, As Cities Burn. Oh my goodness, they are. Are they still a band? Are they still alive? They're still together? They're playing a show with Emory that day. Second band, King's Kaleidoscope. Unreal talent. Those guys are insane. Can't wait to see them. And then Derek Minor. That's right, I said Derek Minor is going to be there. It's going to be rad. You don't want to miss it. Tickets are selling like wildfire. So if you go to emorymusic.com Grab a ticket for yourself and your loved ones and your friends and your family and your pets. Whatever you need, you get those tickets right now because they ain't going to last very long. So make sure you go to emerymusic.com for Saturday, January 27th at Rocket Town in Nashville, Tennessee.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.